I would like to formally introduce, drum roll please. Thank you. Oh, good drum roll. Barbara Scheer, I mean, I mentioned this morning really just in the context of how I met Barbara. How many of you have been to a Barbara Scheer seminar? How many of you read a Barbara Scheer book? How many of you have seen Barbara Scheer on TV and her public television shows? So many of you are familiar with Barbara's work. She's the author of, many of us have read, as we said this morning, Wishcraft, which has sold over 1 million copies. She has also written, where's your books, Barbara? I Could Do Anything If I Only Knew What It Was, Live the Life You Love, and 10 Easy Steps. Her newest book, It's Only Too Late If You Don't Start Now, How to Create Your Second Life at Any Age, which is also the name of her PBS special. Barbara has been on, are you ready? Oprah! Donahue, The Today Show, 60 Minutes, CNN, Good Morning America. She's often known, associated with success teams, which is a concept that she devised and has helped set up literally all over the world. You can read all about all her clients and her fabulousness, and she's gone. on page one in your workbook. So without further ado,
man.
I bring you Barbara Scheer, running up from the back. There you go. Thank you.
Thank you. Can you hear me? That's amazing. Okay. Thank you for coming. I'm delighted. She's a genius. Valerie's a genius. First of all, I wouldn't even think of doing something like this. Not that I wouldn't like it, but I'm so incompetent at the things I'm not really, really good at. I'm good at about two things, and I really mean it, I'm not kidding. I have no sense of direction. When I finally started taking credit cards over the phone, it was so hard for me, I went back into therapy. And it turned out I have ADD, so then I quit therapy and, you know, started finding the guy who wrote the book. She thought of the idea, and all I could think of was, that's too hard. There's too many parts. She said, I'll do it. I went, you will? Okay, yeah. She was later sorry, but it was too bad, because Barbara Winter and I knew we had her, right? We had her. I love this conference. I love a retreat or whatever you want. I love it. And as many of you know, if you know anything about me, I believe that the way you make a life you want or get anything done or even go jogging is not through positive thinking. You know, I mean, if you listen, what I'm about to say, if it works for you, ignore me. I hate everything I'm incapable of doing, right? So I look down on people who can cook. What am I going to do? Admit that you don't want me to think bad things about myself. Well, so here's the point. Positive thinking is all very well and good. If you can wake up in the morning and think, I love life, I love myself, the world is good, I am beautiful, I am smart, and I can do what I want, I'm powerful, and I'm lovable, and I'm capable. If you can do that, do it. What about the rest of us? So I believe that isolation is the dream killer, and I'm going to prove it. You've probably heard me say this on the TV show, but I want to say it again. You know, looking in the mirror and saying you love yourself is all very well and good. Oprah did have me on. She didn't have me on twice, and she should have, because her producers were begging for her to have me on with my last book, which was originally titled subtitled How to Create Your Second Life After 40, the year she was turning 40. I didn't know that, but, and she refused, and maybe she didn't want to admit she was turning 40. Maybe it's because I say such awful things about positive thinking. Somebody told her, you know, love yourself. It's like, like Oprah says, God love her. She's wonderful, incidentally. She's just wonderful in person. She's just real. I don't know how she does it, but she says you can't love anybody else till you love yourself. Well, I flat out want to say, hey, hello. Loving yourself is the hardest thing in the world, and all of you love your dogs, your kids, and your flowers, and a lot of stuff, and it's a lot easier to love other people than yourself, and a lot of you are out in the world doing a lot of good for other people. Even I am, and, you know, I have a feeling I'm really going to love myself when I'm about 95. But personally, to me, the truth is that self-confidence, self-love, all that, the wrong word, believe it or not, when it comes to actually getting into action is the word self. You don't need confidence, and you don't need to love yourself. And when you are doing what you love to do, you do not know you have a self. You can't be stopped to feed yourself's stomach. You don't want to eat lunch. You just want to do the thing. And when somebody says, are you happy? Do you love yourself? Do you love your life? All you do is go, huh? Get her out of here. I'm busy. And you go back. I once saw Arthur Rubinstein, a movie about Arturo Rubinstein, the pianist, and he was conducting, it just knocked my socks off. He was sitting at a piano, they had a camera on his face, and he was playing a Beethoven concerto, and he was conducting this small, it wasn't at a big performance, he was in casual clothes, and he was conducting this small orchestra, and the camera was on his face, and he was sitting there, he was like playing the piano, and then he went, and the orchestra started, this music flooded in. And I looked at his face, and it was the most astonishing moment. You could tell he was totally complete, but he didn't look happy, he didn't look unhappy, he didn't look anything but totally absorbed. And that, to me, is a kind of happiness that, you know, so don't worry about your feelings. Your feelings aren't going to make a difference. If you, you know, if you happen to be sloppy, sleepy, obnoxious, hateful, self-hatred, not a problem. I consider it a survival trait. If you tell people how much you hate yourself, they'll always take care of you. Oh, am I dressed wrong? No, you look wonderful. Oh, I was really stupid. You weren't. You were smart. Self-hatred is good stuff. But just to get rid of the whole positive, see, one of the things that's wrong with being alone is that your mood determines what you do. And when your mood determines what you do, you're in big trouble. And it seems like almost everybody out there says, well, if we could get your mood right, then you could do great stuff. So if you believed in yourself and you felt self-confidence and you loved yourself, then you could really do great stuff because your mood has to be good. But that's because they're thinking about you operating alone. Let me ask you something. Is there anybody in this room who has ever gone to school, held down a job, or raised a kid for more than 6 months in a row? Did you do it with a positive attitude? Did you do it with a negative attitude? Or did you do it with any damn attitude you woke up with that day? All right. So don't you worry how you feel. It doesn't matter if you say, I hate myself and I'm stupid and this is the worst idea in the world. If you've made an appointment, you'll show up for it. Support and structure. You know, support's nice when people are on your side and they say you're doing a great job. That really helps a lot. But believe it or not, you will deliver if people don't like you, if there's structure and accountability. You've been to school. You had to turn in a paper. Your professor didn't like you any more than mine liked me. And you turned the damn thing in last minute. I know. No matter. You turned it in and you wouldn't have if there hadn't been a deadline. Why do you think you went to school and did your papers? Because you were a good person, proud of yourself, glad to live in America? No. You turn in your papers so you wouldn't get an F. Why do you think you go to work every day? So that you can maintain excellence and be proud and no, you go to work because otherwise they'll fire you. And why do you feed your children? Because you love them? Forget it. I know you love your children. That's not why you feed them. You feed your children because otherwise they nag you and they'll tell the neighbors. We are humans, and we do what we have to do. There are two kinds of things human beings do. They do the things that lower anxiety, and they do the things that raise anxiety. What lowers anxiety is eating chocolate, drinking, and watching, like, commercial television, like Friends, you know. Just and nothing hurts all evening, and you just slowly gain weight, which is what nature wants. At the end of the evening, you want to blow your brains out, but during the evening, nothing hurt. Nothing hurt. Then there are the things that raise anxiety. You want to go jogging. You want to write a poem. You'd like to, like, have a little business. You know, it's okay to think about it because that's fun, but then you want to take a first step, and all of a sudden, you realize you haven't gotten your taxes together, you know, or you really need another sandwich. So the things that raise anxiety are the things we are designed not to do. There's a built-in little guy, he's called resistance, and he's like a very primitive bodyguard. He's from the Stone Age, and he's there to make sure you don't do anything that raises anxiety, because maybe it's something you haven't done before, maybe you'll get killed by accident before you've reproduced. That's all he cares about. He can't think, he can't hear, he can't see. He's sort of like in Dr. Strangelove on the army base where you can't tell whether you're really at war or not, so you're at war. He gives you orders. The solution for that is not to just wrestle him to the ground. Forget it. This is a huge, primitive part of you. You cannot win. I got tricks. Oh, have I got tricks. But he's bigger than you are, stupider, and he can, and more primitive. What do you do about it? Well, one day it occurred to me, because none of the positive thinking, just do it, believe in yourself, none of that ever worked for me. I'd go, I'm going to just do it. Oh, I have to take this nap. And then one day I thought, in the Stone Age, people huddled in caves, and they still managed to eat and reproduce. They didn't all marry in their close family. They had to leave the cave and go find a date. They had to go out and find a mastodon to eat. The food wasn't in the cave. They didn't want to do that. How did they do it? Their anxiety went way up. They did it in groups. So they'd say, George and Harry, I'm going over to see that cute little number in the next cave. You know, watch, make sure nobody comes in and kills me, okay? While I get there, you know. Or let's all go together and scare that mastodon. Maybe he'll fall off a cliff instead of biting us, okay? So that's when I designed success teams. This is a version of, there are two kinds of success teams. One is the kind you meet week after week, take one step after another, and together everybody helps everybody. And it's really great. You haven't changed, you have developed no character whatsoever. But the reason you do everything is because everybody's excited. They say, oh, you're going to do this, and you walk in the next week, and they go, did you do it? And you go, yeah, I was like, the pig caught the measles, we had this flood, and they look all disappointed, and you feel like a worm. And the next week, you do it. You do it the night before, of course, but you do it. And so you can walk into your team, and they go, hi, and you go, I did it. And they go, oh, you did? And then you feel better. Why would you do that? Why do you take these steps in a success team? Shame. Shame. Codependency. Guilt. I don't care. Because by the time you get there, who cares how you got there, okay? So, that's why. This is a different kind of isolation ender. This is a kind where we're coming together once, although I'm going to show you how to do telephone teams when you leave so you can stay in touch. This is another one, but this is going to help all of you, and you know it. Some people said, the second I heard this was happening, I started doing the thing I wanted to do that I hadn't done before and I was supposed to do, and I knew it. Just knowing somebody's around. I have a new success team leader in this room. She's going to give you your back rubs, and she's wonderful. And she said to me, I really kind of haven't started. And I said, nobody who gets the kit ever starts, hardly anybody. They don't go out and get people to be in their teams because they're isolated. She said, I know, but I'm supposed to be a team leader. And I said, no. Team leaders, anybody who helps other people is really rotten at asking for help. I have to be knocked in the head when I go, somebody says, Barbara, why don't you read one of your own damn books? So if you're a helping person, the last thing you remember is to say, I would love to do this, but I can't because of that, to the world at large, and watch five people jump in. Today I said, scissors, who has the scissors? I went to every table, people looked at me like I was insane, until I got to a final table and somebody said, I have scissors. You just have to have the courage to look stupid. Anyway, I want to talk today. I'm not going to do my usual workshop. I'm doing something that's a lot more fun, a little special. But I want to talk about impossible dreams. Dreams are impossible. Actually, here's what I want to talk about. The people who feel clueless, I run into a lot of people and they say they don't know what they want. And everybody does know what they want. Everybody. But they say they don't. I was in a San Francisco airport and a woman came up to me. She was a waitress in a little place, and she said, oh, you're Barbara Scher. I said, hi. She said, I have your book. I guess I should do what's in it, huh? I said, most people don't. But she made a big mistake, because you can't talk to me. You just cannot talk to me and say you know who I am and then get away. Because I not only enjoy and love what I'm doing, I'm obsessive about it, and I'm obnoxious about it, and I'm clingy and pushy and controlling, and I'll stick my nose right in your business, and I will call you a week later and say, hi, did you do that thing I said when you didn't know I had your phone number? So I'm bad news. So she said hello, and she thought it was bad. I said, so what do you love to do? What do you want to be when you grow up? She said, I don't know. I said, sure you do. And I figured, okay, it's the money thing, you know, that won't make me. I said, what would you do if you had so much money you couldn't spend it? And all you had to do is figure out how to entertain yourself. You know, after you traveled, after you bought 5 houses, after you helped people, and you're sitting there bored, right, dangling your feet in one of your pools, what would you do to entertain yourself? She said, I don't know. I said, you don't know. She said, I have no idea. I said, come on, do you like athletic things? Do you like creative things? Do you like books? She said, I love books. Now, you would think that would make me feel good. It made me feel awful, because I thought, what if I didn't happen to say that word? Here's a person who would float away. So I said, what kind of books do you like? She said, it isn't the kind of book. I love turning people onto books. I just love it. And a friend of hers, I'm not sure if she was a waitress or not, came over with a big fat book in her hand. She said, she's really good at it. She can turn people onto books. I don't even read stuff like this. I went out and bought the hardback. And I said, why didn't you tell me that? And she said, well, you can't make a living at it. We talked about $1 million, but nobody really believes that. So she said, you can't make a living at it. I said, one thing I'm going to say to you, too. I said, number one, you can make a living at anything. Somebody is doing it. I'll tell you how. Number two, who said you had to make a living at it? Why does everything you love have to be a career? You know, we won't be talking about it too much today, but one of my beliefs is that if you can find the good enough job, one that doesn't bother you, isn't a long commute, it's not toxic, nobody irritates you. If it even uses one of your little ancillary skills, like you like to organize and it lets you organize, nothing passionate but kind of fun stuff that you like, that's a great job. The only thing wrong with that job is that it isn't enough. Cool, then it is a subsidy to the arts. And you can subsidize any damn thing you want. You can write poetry. Well, poetry you cannot write for a living. No one has ever made a buck writing poetry. But a lot of poets think they can write copy for an ad agency, and all I can say is, don't you dare. Don't dig ditches. Don't you dare write poetry for an ad agency, because then you won't be able to write poetry anymore. You can't do that. You know, artists can't really work for other people, because to be an artist is to do new things that nobody understands. Who the hell is going to pay you for that? They don't know what you're doing. They think you're crazy. It's only going to be later that they'll get it, that you knew what you were doing. You know who you're listening to, but they can't hear it. If they could hear it, you wouldn't be an artist. You'd be copying something that existed. So there are a lot of things that don't make money. But I said to her, just for the sake of argument, you love to turn people onto books. You have a gift for turning people onto books. What you love is what you are gifted at. There's never been anybody who wanted something and loved it who wasn't talented at it. And you can give me any argument you want in the world. You know, I had somebody come up and say, I love this guy that was driving me from a hotel. He ran the shuttle bus. He said, I love science, but I'm not good at it. And I said, what do you love about it? And he said, I love labs, laboratories. He said, I love like getting them perfect and getting them organized and making sure nothing's mixed and everything's labeled. This was in Raleigh. I said, we are in Research Triangle. I said, if you go to work as a, and this was like a Latino kid who didn't finish high school. I said, if you go to work as a janitor in any one of these really good places, I promise, and every time you see a lab, you just take extra time to do that, you will stand out. Nobody wants to do what you love to do. And in 10 years, you will be the head of the group. You'll be training people to handle labs, and you'll be doing exactly what you love, making money and getting health benefits at doing it. That's a gift. It isn't. He didn't love science. He thought he loved science. He loved something else. He couldn't do the stuff in science classes. So he figured he didn't. I know people who love dogs, and they say, I don't want to go to vet school. I say, good. First of all, they cost a fortune. They won't let you in. And then you have to like be in a terrible position of having to charge too much money to help people fix their dogs. You know, don't do. If you really feel medical about dogs, take care of dogs. Do it as a volunteer and support yourself some other way. Or there are a dozen ways to make money. As a matter of fact, on my bulletin board, someone I've And on my little web radio show, I had a woman who wrote 105 careers with animals. And there are many more, many more. But anyway, so I said to this woman, do you have a friend who's a school teacher? And she said, I have two friends who are school teachers. I said, how do you think they'd feel if you went to their classes and turned their kids on to some book? She said, they'd love it. I said, so why don't you do that? And I said, do you understand that there's a process I could teach you so that within a year you would be on the lecture circuit talking to parents and school teachers and the Junior League and everybody around the country on how to turn people onto reading books? Do you understand that? She went, no, I didn't know that. I said, and you could go to your library right now and volunteer it for free. And I gave her this list. I said, and you could have a website, and then you could have a newsletter, and you could have an email, and you could do it on the telephone. You could be a reading coach. And she went, and the cardiac arrest began to emerge. Yes, you can make a living at almost anything you love, and maybe you want to, and maybe you should do what Barbara Winters is so brilliantly came up with, which is like income streams, different ways to make 25% or 15% of what you love. I absolutely love it. I not only love it, I accidentally do it. You know, I didn't realize it, but I do it, you know. So today, instead of talking about going after your dream and having the good enough job, what I'm going to do is present you with a little entrepreneur workshop for the rest of us. If you've ever, now not everybody in this room wants to be an entrepreneur, and many people who want to be an entrepreneur know a lot about business already, and others think that to be an entrepreneur is to write a business plan and then to get a loan from the bank and then to get investors and then to be in all the cities in the world. If you like that, if that turns you on, you're good at it. But you are looking at someone who loves pushcart businesses. I like businesses that are under the radar, that make a living for you and your kids and hire a few people in the neighborhood and bring money into the community as opposed to Walmart, which drains money out of the community. Okay? I love that kind of business. I was once going to start something like that, and somebody was very interested in me, and she had a briefcase and gold. She worked, you know, one of those people who does PowerPoint a lot better than me. I mean, everybody does PowerPoint. And she looked at me very kindly and she said, well, we're going to do this and we'll have you be our kind of figurehead. We'll take your idea and run with it. I wanted to do a little entrepreneur corps for women who didn't have any money and just want to do home businesses. And she said, but really, we're going to have to like exclude those women. We're going to really have to have women who have MBAs and who can really like take over the world. And I said, I love the idea of women taking over the world, but that's not the business I want. She said, but the business you want is just a sustaining business. I said, that's a bad word, sustaining. She said, that's a bad word. It will never get investors. You will never have, you know, return on so and so and so and so. I said, I got a great idea. You take my idea. I'm going home. Okay. I'm going to teach it to people who can sit around a table and go, I don't know how. I know how to make brownies, but I don't know how to ask a market to you, you know, to take them. I know how to. I could get my friend to package them, but I wouldn't know how to ask a restaurant. I couldn't do that. Those are my people. Okay, I wrote a little cartoon booklet called How to Get What You Really Want, even though you have no goals, no character, and you're often in a lousy mood. So if that ever does, if that describes you, you came to the right workshop. Now, so today I'm going to do a little tiny entrepreneur workshop for you, and it's not like any you've ever seen before, and it's much too primitive if you really already know how to run a business, but I suggest you do it anyway, okay? And it's got a couple of exercises. How are we doing on time? When do I have to stop here? Okay, great. So what I want you to do is to break into groups of three, preferably without leaving your chairs. If, however, you've been popped out, I want you to take your goods, stand up, raise your hand and find somebody else to break in, to get into a group of three. I'll give you 60 seconds. One of the reasons that we think dreams are impossible, one of the reasons this woman did not know, she thought she didn't know what she wanted, was because when you think something's impossible, it's invisible. So if I say, what do you want? You say, I don't know. Because what you really mean is, I don't know anything that's possible. And there are a couple of really common boo-boos. One is you can't make money at it, which I talked with her. But there are people who say, you know, I say, well, if you could do anything, what would you love? And they go, oh, I'd like a bed and breakfast, animal refuge, a spa. One of those things. And I say, what's your obstacle? Because wish and obstacles. And they say, $1 million. I call that the real estate fallacy. I want a bed and breakfast, but I have to buy the bed and breakfast. I want an animal refuge, but I need to buy 100 acres. I want a spa, but I need to buy a spa. Thank God you don't have money, because if you did, you would actually buy those things. And then you would find out too late that you might not like it, or it might not make money, and your money would go down the tubes. Not that it would matter if you were a multimillionaire, but you put your heart into those things. And every time I see a little business go out of business, my heart breaks, because I know somebody really cared about that little business. So no, it's really better if you have no money for those things. What do? You find a bed and breakfast where the people that you like, you get to know the people, and then you offer to help them out. That'll help you see if you like it, and it'll get them to know you. Then you tell them if they want you to handle it for a weekend, you'd be glad to. Or they may, believe me, if they own a bed and breakfast, they don't get away. And if they've owned one for 12 years or more, they want out. Even if they loved it. So after a little while, you come in and you say, okay, do you want to go to Spain? And I'll just take over for sweat equity, and I will work here, and I'll send you a check, and you can go for 6 months. This is if you love what you're doing, you ratchet it up a step by step. And after a little while, you have a B&B without a nickel. You know, you can really do it that way. Or you can even be a traveling B&B person who relieves people for 2 weeks at a time. You don't have to buy the real estate. Do you want to have an animal refuge, but you can't afford the acreage? Do you know how many people have farms and acres that don't use them and are nuts for animals? And will probably help you start a nonprofit so you can use that place. You know, you want to do a spa? Everybody I ever met who wanted to do a health center and a spa, outside of the fact that they loved the idea of the real estate, which women always fall for, I do too, they really just love the idea of having fabulous people help people get healed. They didn't want to do the books and sit in the office and make the money and do the advertising and do the insurance and deal with the problems. They wanted that. So I said, well, why don't you, first of all, go work in the office of a spa and find out how they get their money and what it takes and how much they need and see if you really want that. If you do, cool, then you move to the next step. But if you don't, since obviously you're gifted at finding great yoga teachers and great, other healing teachers, go out and work for a spa and go out and find the people. Start your own little agency that finds totally heavenly people to come heal people. You know damn well that'll allow you to sit in their classes, and that's really what you want. You just want to share it. So the truth is that money, you know, you got to really think about money. Money often is not the problem. Then there's the all or nothing. I really love this one. People say, well, I can't quit my job and live in a garret. You know, I have kids to support and responsibilities, I feel like saying. Who said you should quit your job to go after your dream? That's like saying I'm going to burn all my clothes before I go out and buy some new outfits. I go naked to the mall. How about a little transition here? Like, don't jump on the ice. Put one foot on the land, one foot on the ice. And then, you know, hold on to something, put the other feet on. If it'll hold you, then we move another step. You know, this whole business of all or nothing, I've got to do. And then there's another one. And I know people in this room are secretly thinking, oh, they've got this secret shame. And that's called, I want too many things. And I can't choose. Let me get you unstuck in one sentence. Who said you were supposed to choose? You have to do them all. Don't you get it? Everybody acts like they're going to die on Thursday. You know, don't run up your credit cards. You got decades to kill, kids. Pace yourself. You know, pace yourself. You know, to say I can't pick one is like saying, which of my children should I feed? You know, all of them. Because some of them might be a career, one might be something you do once, and one might be something you do every Saturday afternoon, and one might be something you do for 2 weeks, once a year. Everything fits in, and you're not dying on Thursday. Okay, here's the exercise. I'll walk you through this. Who's standing with nothing to do? Oh, okay. If you think I'm controlling and I micromanage, you got it right, and I have no intention of ever changing. I intend to fix your life whether you like it or not. I'm too old to improve. I'm going to stay this way. I get worse every year. Okay. This first exercise, and those of you who've been in my workshops think you know what we're going to do, but it's not exactly the same thing. It's called the lying game. And in the lying game exercise, you each go around in your little circle of three telling each other a big lie and what you love about it. Here's what we're going to do in this workshop. Here's what the lie will be, because you have to go around four times. The first lie you will tell each other is that you are the owner of a service business, a business that doesn't manufacture anything and doesn't have a store, but that you're a person who does something. I'm the owner of a service business. I give speeches, you know, and I write books, okay? So you're the owner of a service business. I will give you only 1 minute to get around this circle, less, 30 seconds. And here's what you're gonna say. How do you do? I own a service business, and here's what I do. I help people with their bills, and I go to everybody's houses. I get them ready for their taxes. And then you have to say, here's what I love most about it. You're lying, so you might not love anything about it. But try to think about something you might actually love about it, okay? This is a business where you earn money by doing something, all right? And it's a lie. You can make up anything. I'm a dog groomer. I wash cars. I clean houses. I go to people's offices and I lecture them about how bad they are personally and bad human beings. You can have some fun or you can get real, but this is a service business, and you have to say what your business is and what you love about it, and each person gets about 10 or 15 seconds. Begin at once.
No, I just wanted to record a few people. What did you say? What's your lie?
I'm a marriage counselor. I meet with people, and I just love the fact that at the end of the day, the men really have control of their situation and their marriage.
Oh, beautiful.
Okay, thank you. What was your lie?
My lie was, my service business is going to different people's homes and showing how to organize their homes, and my lie was that I enjoy seeing what they have.
What they own.
To take a peek at.
That's great. What was yours?
I said that my service business is that I own a spa, and my lie would be I like seeing people come out with new makeovers.
Uh-huh. So, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody, now we're going to go around again. Okay, your time is up. Now you're going to go around a second time. You're going to tell a second lie. And this lie, you are going to say, I'm in the retail business. That means you have a store of some kind, a boutique, a big store, a chain of stores, anything you want. And you say, hi, I'm in the retail business. Here's the kind of, here's what I sell, here's what I do, and here's what I love about it. You have 10 or 15 seconds each. Begin at once. But what were you saying?
I sell dildos.
Huh?
I sell dildos.
And what do you love about it most?
I just love that women are going to be able to gain satisfaction and pleasure from it.
Fabulous. I'm sorry, what was yours?
I own a wonderful shop that has all kinds of wonderful things for your home and for yourself. And I travel to Europe and all over the United States finding wonderful different things.
And
to
what
sell.
Do you love most about it?
The travel and exciting people about these excited that I find the things that I get excited about and they get excited
beautiful.
Too.
Okay, are you finished? Is everybody finished? Great, third lie. In this lie, you make something. You manufacture or hand make, or you make a thing, okay? You are a manufacturer, or you are a potter, but you make a thing. You have to go around and tell what that lie is, what do you make, and what do you love most about it, okay? Begin at once, you have 30 seconds all together. I'm sorry, what did you just say?
I said that I make hats now, and I
love it because it's an old art that is no longer...
It's an old art?
Yeah, it's an old art that's not around anymore, so I'm special.
Wonderful, wonderful. What's your lie going to be? Have you got your lie ready? Okay, get to work.
What was your lie?
Oh, I'm a apparel manufacturer, women's athletic apparel manufacturer.
Oh, what do you love about it?
I love making clothes that are comfortable and also stylish.
Fabulous. Did you do yours yet?
Yes.
I'm
a rag quilt maker, and I love making it out of flannel. And for me, it's like an inanimate hug that one can always pick up when life is throwing you lemons.
Wonderful.
Okay, and now we're going to do the fourth lie. Well, everyone who is not listening to me, please raise your hand. One, two, only three people. Oh, I said, will everyone who is not listening to me, please raise your hand. Now we're going to do the fourth lie, the fourth and final lie. You can say you are anything, but you must change gender. You must pretend you are a man and then say anything you want about what you do. You can be service, it can be manufacturing, it can be any damn thing in the world, okay? Begin at once. Now you can take, I'm gonna give you a whole minute for this one because it's interesting. Yeah. Yes, you have to say what you like about it. As a man. I'm sorry, what did you say you would be doing?
A photojournalist.
Okay. Yes. What do you love about it?
The travel, the meeting people, getting inside their lives.
Beautiful. Anybody else ready at this table?
Yeah, I'm a published author. And the thing that I like about it is just being able to have the time to research and become an expert on something and share my perspective with the world.
Fabulous. Did you have anything? Not yet?
Okay.
Anybody come up with anything good?
I'm a professional surfer.
What are you?
A professional surfer.
Ah, what do you love most about it?
I love being out in the water.
Great.
My muscles.
Your muscles, that's good, being strong.
Well, did you want? I'm a contractor. I design and build houses, and I like the creativity of designing a house.
Great. Did you have one yet?
Not yet. I'm a flamenco dancer and part-time a bullfighter.
Oh, fabulous. And what do you love about it most?
Freedom, movement, strength, daring.
Beautiful.
Looking over my shoulder.
What did you say yours was?
I'm a tractor trailer driver.
Ah, and what do you love about it?
I get to go all over the country and see the United States, and there's nobody, my boss isn't watching over my shoulder.
Fabulous. Are you almost finished? Is anybody not finished? Okay, I'll give you another 15 seconds. Get moving. Tell her to hurry up. Okay, may I have your attention? How do you like lying? It's a lot of fun. Okay, let me ask you a question about the last one, because it's the freshest in your mind. Did you find that things changed when you pretended you were a man, that anything changed? In what way? Let me come around with a mic. That might help. What did you find was different when you changed genders?
Well, my ego was so important. I was successful. I was the man of the year.
So did you find that that you dream bigger, you mean, yeah. Basically?
Yeah,
did everybody find that? Yeah, what did you find? Here, take this.
I sort of felt I could let out my unacceptable side, my give me respect, give me power, be afraid of me, sigh, which is not me at all as a woman.
Was it fun?
It was kind of fun to just think if I walked into an office, people would like tremble, you know.
Anybody else find anything interesting happen when you did it as a different gender? Come on, don't you be afraid of this mic. I'll come get you.
It was the one I went to was having physical stamina and the strength and the power. It was like all those things I want to do that I don't think I can get in shape to do, like, you know, take the trip to Machu Picchu so I can walk up to the to the ruins. And those kinds of things that I could say, yeah, if I were a man, maybe that would be easier. That was the only one I could come
Okay,
up with.
Great. Anybody else have anything interesting? Here, take this.
It just felt like I was willing to do something a lot more risky or riskier. Take a lot more chances and kind of step out on a limb.
Uh-huh, good. Anybody else here at this table? Anything interesting? Raise your hand if you had anything fun. Okay. What was yours?
Mine was to be KU's head basketball coach, but what I wanted to say was that I immediately went to things that I thought would be impossible as a woman. Like, that was my first thought. Like, what things can I not do, you know?
Ah, so you, like, hate the limitations, yeah. And that's what you loved about, that's what you learned about. Well, you learned something.
Yeah.
All of you, every one of you, like, why do I have to have these limitations? I don't like them. And since you don't ever think about what would it be like if I were a man, you don't think about the limitations. Or yes, what was yours?
I was much more successful and I didn't have to work as hard because I hired bright females.
Yes. Yes. Incidentally, I did this exercise in a mixed group with men and women, and the men had to pretend they were women. And at first they got a little embarrassed and said, you know, I don't own a brassiere factory and stuff like that. But afterwards, when I said, what did you notice? The women said, I noticed that I dreamt bigger, I took bigger chances, I didn't think anyone would disapprove of me if I was like greedy or tough or strong or, you know, I took a bigger bite of the pie. And the men said, I would feel more freedom, that I could do what I wanted, not what I'm supposed to do, which was a really unexpected thing. Did you have something to say?
Yeah.
Here, say it into this.
Thank you.
When I chose my first profession as a man, I felt compelled to do something big and important. And so I kind of went through it, and I was like, I lost my zest. I lost my sense of creativity and my sense of fun, and I just felt, ooh, I wouldn't want to be a guy.
So that basically, yeah, so what you did was you couldn't find what you loved about it. So that was, so if that was what your experience was, sure, that's doing what you're supposed to do instead of doing what you want to do, you know. Yeah, as women, we don't get respected as much as men. We're considered children, but what the goodie that comes along with that is the freedom. Nobody gives a damn what we do. We don't count. We can do whatever we want. When people say to me, I'd love to take a course and so-and-so, but my husband won't go, he doesn't like it, he won't let me. I said, will he hit you? No, it won't hit me. I said, is he gonna leave you? Well, no, but he doesn't support me. He gives me a headache about it. I said, does he earn a living and help support you? She said, yeah. I said, he's a gold mine. I said, first of all, I said, first of all, how's he going to stop you? What's he going to do, sulk? She went, yeah. I said, so what? I said, so what, you give him a kiss, you cook him something he likes, you say, goodbye, honey, and you go do what you want. What's he going to do? If he won't hit you and he won't leave you and he pays the rent, he's a subsidy to the arts, right? Okay. Now we are going to do the second exercise, and we have to get it in 6 minutes. Second exercise is called Good Gossip, and in it, one at a time, you turn your back and you listen real carefully. You've got to be able to hear the other two people. And the other two people gossip behind your back about you. But here's what they say. It's very, very strict. When someone's back is turned, you talk to the other two people. And you say three things. The first thing you say is, I like her, name any one of the businesses she named, I like that you think she liked, you know. I like her idea of organizing people's homes. I think it's a good idea. And I think she's the right person to do it because, and then just come up with what you noticed about her. She seems sensible. She seems to have a flair. She seems happy. You know, she seems to come up with positive things. And then finally, and this is a little tricky, you have to say, I know what I'm talking about because, and then you have to think of any connection you have that makes you know a little bit about what she's doing. So if it was the organizing business and she turned her back, she said five, you know, three things or four things, but I picked that one. I said, you know, I like her idea of organizing people's homes. I think that's an interesting career, and it could be an interesting business, and it could be developed. I think she'd be good for it because she's pleasant with people. She obviously has organizing skills, but she seems to like people. And I think she wants them to have a good life. She'd put something personal in it. I ought to know about it because I have two friends who are professional organizers. And I could talk to them. So I ought to, you know, or I ought to know about it because I'm so disorganized I would kill for a personal organizer. Or, you know, in other words, what makes you just a little bit of an expert or somebody with a little know-how? Can you understand those three things? First, interesting business, here's why. Second, she'd be good for it, here's why. Third, I ought to know, here's why. Okay, so will the first person turn your back and pick up a pencil and paper? You have to write down everything they say. And the other two people, you just have to lean forward, talk to each other. Begin at once. I'll give the first person gets 1 minute. I have a question to ask you. Each group, what was the most interesting thing that you think happened for either the gossiper or the person who was listening? Raise your hand. Anything interesting at all? Yes.
You ended up choosing for the other person what you'd be attracted
to. Yeah. When I was asked why did you pick that, I was like, I don't know, it just sounded more fun to me.
Great. Very good. Anybody do that? Yeah. That's okay. That what you don't know is you have just created a board of directors. A board of directors isn't a bunch of really obnoxious old farts from SCORE. Excuse me. I think SCORE is reforming, but I call them SCORN. That's where you go to get humiliated by white-haired guys who think you're stupid. I once did a small workshop for AT&T, and it was sponsored by SCORE, and I said the same thing there. And in the break, one of them said, you tell people to do business plans for businesses that can't do business plans. A small business doesn't do business plans. I don't know anybody in business right now who did a business plan, right? And you tell everybody they have to do it, and you send them home to do a business plan, and they feel inferior, and, you know, it's all women. And he said, that's right, we do it to stop them from making any mistakes. And I said, bring them here, I'm gonna take them apart. Right, and two other men came up and said, he is from the old school, we're trying to get rid of people like that, we're sorry. They know what they do, they know what they do, okay? But a board of directors is a bunch of people who think your idea is good, who think you'd be good at doing it, and who know something they can throw into the pot. That's a board of directors, and you just created one. So next time you want a board of directors, throw a party and do that exercise. And, you know, and the ones who say, well, I don't think it'll work, that's fine, not on my board, right? And the ones who go, yeah, she'd be good, and the ones who can play, the ones who are flexible and have creativity and imagination. Anything else interesting happen? Yes?
It gave us a chance to play.
It gave you a chance to play. That's great. To talk about what was fun and to be somebody. Okay. And you?
We found it interesting that no matter which the category was,
yes,
in
other words, each individual person, whether they were choosing service, manufacturing, or retail, had something in common.
They all had something in common.
So it wasn't so...
The
elements that they had in common. So did you find that was helpful when your back was turned, that people were doing that for you?
Yeah,
really? Gave you a new view? Did it give you a new perspective? Yeah, good, good, good. Anything else interesting? I never get to be there, and I want to hear something. Come on, you guys, you stingy, stingy things. Yes. Yes, I'm sorry, say it louder.
The gossipers had great new ideas.
The gossipers had great new ideas, I agree. Yeah, did you all find that? That they really put, so how do you feel about being on a board of directors? It's more fun than you thought, isn't it? If you do it the right way. If you do it the right way, don't go where it's like a big institution and mostly guys, and you know, don't do that. Yes.
It wasn't a real big thing, but on a subtle level, I think that we're not used to hearing someone praise us behind our backs. Because you can tell, like, Donna, for example, the first thing she said, she looked up and she had, her eyes were kind of big, and she said, thank you.
Yes. How many of you get that all the time? You, your back is turned and people tell you how fantastic, you are, how smart you are, right? And why they would be able to help you. How many of you get that on pretty much a daily basis? How many of you think that if you did get that on a daily basis, you might be doing a little bit better going toward your dreams than you are now? Okay, that's my point. Isolation is the dream killer, not your lousy attitude, which is of no importance whatsoever. One more comment and then we're going to break. Yes?
I was actually wondering if the person being gossiped about was surprised at what the other people...
Were you? Were you surprised to hear what they said? Were you surprised? Well, okay. Were you surprised to know... How many of you were described in a way you hoped you would be someday, but you didn't know you already were? Like, oh my God, I'd like to look that way. I didn't know I already looked that way to strange. Yeah, you just open up a lot of time in your schedule. No more self-improvement. How many of you are surprised by what they chose for you to do behind your back? Okay, give it some thought. You got a 15-minute break. Think about what you learned. We're going to do something fun when you come back. I'll see you back here in 15 minutes.